Today, we have two very special guests on our program, introducing Lem and Lime.
Hello.
For Starry Lemon Lime Soda.
Thanks for having us.
What is Starry Lemon Lime Soda?
It's a crisp, clear burst of lemon lime flavor, and it's caffeine-free.
Between us, one of you must be a little more important to Starry than the other. Who is it?
We're both important.
So we could just as easily be Starry Lime Lemon Soda.
No, that doesn't sound right.
Oh, I like it.
So you saying hip-hop could be hop-hip?
Works for me.
Starry Lemon Lime Soda. Starry hits different.
Moncrief on News Talk.
A couple of days ago, the bomb squad was called to an estate in North Dublin where a controlled explosion was carried out. It's the sort of thing you hear about occasionally, but without knowing exactly how ordnance disposal works. Ray Lane is a retired Lieutenant Colonel of the Irish Ordnance Corps and the author of Only a Soldier Knows. Ray, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean. Lovely to be here.
Lovely to have you on the show. Now, you joined us, you would have joined the bomb disposal team in 1978.
Correct.
In those days, Ray, what kind of protection, what kind of technology did you have at your disposal?
Well, back then, very limited, Sean. And as you mentioned, I've written a book. And actually, the reason I wrote the book was to pay honour to the guys in 1974 who went out into the streets of Dublin and Monaghan with no equipment, or virtually no equipment, to deal with what was out there that day. And they never actually got any official recognition for the bravery they showed at that particular time. So the book is written in their honour.
Right. Okay. So when you started then, Ray, what kind of equipment did you have?
We had very basic equipment, Sean. And we had a British robot called a wheelbarrow, which was like a wheelbarrow. Very basic mechanical structure, limited protection in suits, very, very basic equipment. But we were beginning. Mm. We were beginning the process.
Yeah. And what did a wheelbarrow do in those days?
It was on tracks and you couldn't keep the tracks on. That was the problem. They used to come off. And in fact, the tracks were the old fan belts on the Chieftain tanks, would you believe, which were modified for a robot. So the tracks would come off and that was it. Your robot was useless. It was just stuck at the side of the road. So you would end up putting on your bomb suit then and going forward, which really nobody wants to do.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And in those days, a bomb suit, was it just a suit? Did you have a screen of some sort?
It was basically, Sean, a flak jacket and a helmet with a visor on the helmet.
Oh, wow.
Really, that was it. Yeah, really. When I think back to it, it's hard to believe.
Yeah. And those would have been in the days where, you know, there were bombs out there you had to deal with that, you know, wanted to do harm, not things that were
They were serious days, Sean. I mean, we had serious problems. And so arising from that, a number of people were sent to different courses around the world. I was sent to the UK with the British Army. Other people were sent to America. And basically the idea was to upskill about people and equipment for what was coming, or for the challenge we had, and future-proof it for what was coming into the future.
Yeah. And in those days when you were being sent on courses, the kind of bombs you were dealing with, would they have been very sophisticated?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I served in Afghanistan 2007 as an advisor to the four-star general. And I can remember one particular day where the Taliban had taken out a number of our soldiers, and he was kind of in shock. And I said, you know, sir, if I brought in 10 of the IRA into Afghanistan, you know, our 150,000 soldiers wouldn't be enough to deal with what they can throw at us. That was the level of sophistication. Yeah.
And could you describe sophisticated in what way were those bombs?
Well, somebody mentioned to me recently about car bombs in Belfast and, you know, how indiscriminate they were and that they were killing locals as well as the security forces. And of course, the IRA certainly didn't want to kill locals. So what they did was they modified the bomb so that 20 minutes before the bomb would detonate, smoke would fill the car. And they had already informed through use of the media that if people saw smoke coming out of a car, go the opposite way. And then 20 minutes later, the bomb would detonate.
Wow.
Now, that's sophistication.
Yeah. And were those bombs, I mean, if they were discovered in advance, could those bombs be diffused, or would it be not worth the risk?
No. That's where your robot comes in. If you can deploy your robot quick enough to get to the car, you can obviously dismantle or mitigate the effects of the device. But it's a competition, Sean, between the security forces and the other side. They're looking at your capability and they're trying, like, for example, the smoke that went off in the car, the IRA had worked out how long it would take the British Army to deal with that car. So they obviously picked a time inside that time so that, you know, they couldn't actually get to the car in time. It's a cat and mouse game.
Yeah. So depending on the circumstances, of course, is defusing a bomb relatively straightforward? Or, you know, the notion you have from films is that you pull out the red wire or the white wire and all that kind of stuff. Is it more straightforward than that?
No. I mean, first of all, the whole principle behind bomb disposal is preservation of life.
Mm.
So you can't let a bomb detonate. And when you work on it, you have to be sure that it's not going to go off. Obviously, for your own safety, safety of your kit and the people. So particularly the IRA had some of the most sophisticated bomb makers in the world. And, I mean, they could launch 400 kg of explosive into the air remotely. Now, I mean, from a truck, remotely. Yeah. So nobody there. So you arrive out there to deal with that. You know, people who can design a bomb like that don't like you tampering with it. So they're going to perhaps put some sort of device in it to ensure that you can't work on it.
Right, okay. So, and a lot of instances in those days, at least, it probably would have been just better to go for, you know, remote access rather than sending an individual up there.
For sure. But then again, the people who are making the bombs are looking at our capability and saying, no, we're going to put it somewhere they can't get the robot into. And they put it in such a way that you don't have access to the remote means. So they're calling you in, if you like.
Yeah. How much has the robotic technology improved?
I mean, the whole capability that the Irish Defence Force... I mean, we were invited to go to Afghanistan in 2007 by the Americans. The British were withdrawing from Kabul to go to Kandahar. And the British said the only country that could take over with the same level of expertise and capability were the Irish. Hmm. And it was a NATO mission. So, you know, I often heard the talk about neutrality. I mean, I wore an Irish tricolour on one sleeve and I had a NATO flash on the other sleeve, you know. And we were there for a specific purpose, and that was to reduce the casualties from improvised explosive devices in Afghanistan, which was running at 55% at that stage. So we brought a lot of experience from Northern Ireland, from the Republic, to Afghanistan, and we did make a difference. I'm not saying a huge difference, but we made a difference. But back robots, we are fortunate in Ireland, Sean, to have two companies producing two of the best robots in the world. And I was telling your researcher, I was in Ukraine a number of weeks ago on the front line, and I had the great privilege to see Ukrainian army vehicles being deployed. And when they opened the back of them, out came Irish-made robots from Kilbritton in Cork.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I must say it gave me a little, you know, pick me up to see that. And then when I went over to speak to the Ukrainian soldiers, they were just over the moon about these robots. And in fact, the German government had bought them in Cork and given them free gratis to the Ukrainians as part of their, you know, their gifting process.
Yeah. Kharkiv, what are they dealing with there? Is it like unexploded Russian ordnance? Or?
Well, you see, both sides have laid... Our function out there is to look at the front line, the 1,000-kilometre front line, and ascertain how much of it is actually mined. So obviously both sides mine it, but the problem is that in the buildings within the minefields, the Russians in particular have put improvised explosive devices in there. So you might be clearing the minefield of conventional mines, but the minute you get to a house or a building or a school or whatever else, that's actually booby-trapped. So you actually need a different capability to deal with that. And that's where the robots were coming, working in.
Ah, right. Okay. And so these Irish-constructed robots, are they used in many countries?
They are. Well, obviously, the Irish Army has just taken... In fact, the machine used last week in the case you were talking at was known as a Reacher, and it's produced by a company called Riamde in Tralee. They are used, but I suppose I have a little bee in my bonnet about it in a way. Like, when I see the German government buying Irish equipment and donating it to the Ukrainian military, and then I see the Irish government donating money to NGOs. I really, and I have this in the book, I don't understand why we can't buy Irish, buy Irish capability and give it to Ukraine. Keeping jobs in Ireland, allowing these companies to develop their R&D. And I mean, these are, I'm not just saying that I'm being patriotic here. Mm. These are the best robots in the world, without question.
Yeah.
It's something we should be very proud of. But I just feel that the Department of Foreign Affairs, the government, when I'm out there and I hear them donating money to NGOs, who then go out to their own countries and buy capability. So why not just buy Irish and donate it?
Yeah, indeed. And this Reacher now, I assume it would have cameras on it and all that kind of stuff.
So oh, you it's can highly have a... sophisticated, Sean. I mean, it's got a claw on it like your wrist. It allows you work like as if you're using your hand. It's got cameras everywhere. It has. It's a remote. It's wireless. You have no cables. It's on wheels, so no problem with anything coming off. And it's the Avenger, which the Ukrainians are using, the Reacher, which the Irish are using. They are superb machines. Superb.
You had I understand you had an incident in 2009 in Dundalk.
Hotel.
Well, you got a bit of a surprise. Tell us what happened then.
Okay, you see, you can have the best equipment in the world and the best training, and before you go anywhere, you obviously carry out a kind of a strategic risk assessment of where you're going. I mean, you have millions of questions you want answered before you deploy anything. But anyway, this vehicle had been in the hands, allegedly, of the IRA, and there was a possibility that there might be some sort of device in the back of the vehicle. So we were tasked by the Garda Síochána, as we always are, and fully briefed by them. And I just asked one question, would there be a possibility of anybody being in the vehicle? And they said, no, unlikely. So anyway, we evacuated the hotel, we evacuated the car park, we evacuated the requisite distance. I deployed my robot with a little charge on the claw to open the sliding door on the vehicle. And I fired it and it slid beautifully open. I was delighted with myself. And then I put the arm of the robot into the dark back of the vehicle to find a face looking at me. Yeah, I got some fright. So at that stage, that becomes a kind of a category A incident where there's life at risk, life that I through my actions, maybe, you know. Anyway, so I got into my suit and went forward. And when I got to the vehicle around the robot looking in, I couldn't see anybody. And the other thing was that when I saw the face, I could hear it talking as well. And that, you know, that really concerned me. So I got back to my vehicle, looked into the camera, the coloured camera. And what it was when the arm went in, there was a plastic bag in the back. And whatever way the arm configured the plastic bag, it made it look like a face. And when I hit the charge to open the sliding door, the radio came on quietly.
And that was the talking.
That was the talking.
My word. Ray, fascinating speaking with you today. Thank you so much for doing so. That was Ray Lane there. As you heard, he's a retired Lieutenant Colonel of the Ordnance Corps in the Irish Army. Also the author of Only a Soldier Knows.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
Today we have two very special guests on our program, introducing Len and Lime.
Hello.
For Starry Lemon Lime Soda.
Thanks for having us.
What is Starry Lemon Lime Soda?
It's a crisp, clear burst of lemon lime flavor, and it's caffeine free.
Between us, one of you must be a little more important to Starry than the other. Who is it?
We're both important.
So we could just as easily be Starry Lime Lemon Soda.
No, that doesn't sound right.
Ooh, I like it.
So you saying hip-hop could be hop-hip?
Works for me.
Starry Lemon Lime Soda. Starry hits different.